Well, good morning, everyone. Louise is away this week, but I am so happy to be joined by Liz Hobbs. Liz is with me this morning, and she has come all the way from Edmonton, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and Liz is the director of Shoeswap Theatre's production of Romeo and Juliet. Welcome.
Thank you.
It's so exciting to have you here, somebody from outside.
Yay!
Coming to share their expertise. So, Liz, we're going to talk about all kinds of things to do with the production and community theater. But first, I want you to tell me, because you look like you're 18 years old. So
I'm not.
I'm just going to guess you might have a few years of experience in Shakespeare. So why don't you give us a little, you know, the Liz Hobbs 101 background.
All right. So I'm actually 31.
You're still very young.
Yes, this is true. I started doing Shakespeare when I was, well, I actually started doing theater when I was 13.
Oh, wow.
And it happened to be Shakespeare. It was Midsummer Night's Dream was the very first production that I ever did, which was my intro to theater and to Shakespeare. And then I ended up being part of a young company of the professional company that had done a residency in my school at 14, I think, 13 or 14,
wow,
doing Taming of the Shrew, and kind of fell in love with Shakespeare and with theater in general, and went to Fine Arts High School, and then I went to the U of A and did my degree in drama and psychology, and have been working professionally full-time in theater ever since with a lot of Shakespeare involved.
That is amazing. That's like a dream come true for most people, or not most people, maybe, but for some people, imagine working your like actually making a living in Shakespeare. That's just,
it could be worse.
Amazing. No kidding. You could be in a factory. No.
Exactly. No.
Oh, that's exciting. So, well, tell us like how did, I don't even know how that's even possible. I remember being 14 years old and having to learn one paragraph from The Merchant of Venice, and it was a nightmare. So how did you fall in love with Shakespeare at 14?
Well, I've always loved language. I've always been a language person. I speak three languages-ish. It was easy for me. It was always really easy. I started reading Shakespeare just in my own time when I was in grade 6 or 7 or something. I mean, I didn't understand a lot of it, but I was fascinated by it. And then when I started diving into it, I mean, it was a residency led by a professional company. So we had some people who really knew what they were doing, teaching us how to learn how to speak Shakespeare. So that made it a bit easier, but I don't know.
So it kind of is its own language, isn't it?
It kind of is. I mean, even now I find after having been doing Shakespeare for a really long time, when I've been away from it for a while, or I see a production of a play that I've never seen or read before, it always takes like 10, 15 minutes to kind of clock your brain over into the backwards way of speaking that is 500 years old.
Yeah. That's kind of exciting. I mean, I know what that's like. It's exciting to hear or to see a production that's done in the real Shakespeare language, because sometimes you see things that are adapted for modern English.
Yeah.
And it does take you a little while to get back into hearing it. But once you are, you totally get it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not like it's completely foreign.
No, right? I mean, it's English.
Yeah.
It's just English in a way that we don't necessarily use it that frequently.
Yeah. And it's like watching a British drama, too, right? It takes you a few minutes.
Totally. To wrap your head around the accents. And, yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing. Like, we can adjust. It's in us somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with when you're watching a play, if the actors know what they're saying, then it's much easier for the audience to pick that up. I think it's actually way easier to watch Shakespeare than it is to read Shakespeare.
Oh, yes, definitely. It is meant to be played. Like, it is meant to be watched.
It's a play. Yeah. It's not really meant to be studied and read, even though that's what most people's experience with it is.
Yeah. Well, isn't that interesting? Because, yeah, in high school, you're always assigned reading. Like, oh, we have to read this year and read, you know, all these complex, you know, as the grades go up, you read the more complicated plays.
Yeah, exactly.
But yet, it really isn't meant to be read like a novel.
No, it's really not. I think that's why so many people hate Shakespeare, is because they've been forced to read it in high school and without really having the context of how cool it is on stage.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe it's something you can change.
Maybe.
Change the world. Awesome. Okay, well, tell us about your post-secondary experience then. Okay, so you're a teenager, you're in love with Shakespeare. So what made you decide to go to U of A, and what did you study there?
Well, I originally planned on going to the U of A to audition to do my Bachelor of Fine Arts in Acting, because they have a super great program. At the time, it was supposed to be one of the best in the country. Mm-hmm. And I'm from Edmonton, so that was convenient. But after I tried to audition a couple times, but I didn't actually get around to it. And I think part of that was because I was really fascinated by all the other aspects of theater as well, and didn't want to just focus on an acting degree. I had started falling in love with directing at that point in time, which isn't really an opportunity that's available in the BFA program. And I also have fallen in love with a lot of the production side of things. And so I stayed in the BA, which is more of a general degree on theater. And I also was doing a double major in psychology at the same time. Deluded
that
myself.
Seems like a good fit.
I mean, it was. For a while, I deluded myself that I might actually go get a real job and pursue psychology. But eventually realized that I only really loved it because it informed theater.
Yeah. Well, and that's true. And actually, a lot of people will say that about an arts degree in any way, that they took, you know, all these other support minors and things to kind of, well, just in case I have to adapt.
Yeah.
But really, all of those things feed the arts.
Absolutely.
So it's all good. You can just pretty much take, like, I think when I was in school, like one of my considered minors was archaeology.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I really loved clay and sculpture when I was in school. So it kind of worked, right?
Like, perfect. It fed my ideas. Those are totally related to each other.
So I think you can get away with pretty much anything for a minor when you're in the arts field.
Yeah, this is true.
Okay, so after University of Alberta, then what happened?
The company that had come to my junior high, where I had fallen in love with both theater and Shakespeare, hired me as their associate artistic director, running residency programs in schools, which is, of course, how I'd originally gotten involved in theater in the first place, about a decade before that. Yeah. And so I started running their residency programs, where we'd take a Shakespeare show with six or seven professional actors, where we'd have rehearsed the show for 3 weeks and have a full touring show. And then we'd go into schools for 3 or 5 days, and we'd play all the major characters. And then we'd have the kids in the school rehearse with us for 2 or 3 or 5 days. Wow. And take on all of the smaller roles in the show. So we did Macbeth, Midsummer Night's Dream, Taming of the Shrew,
amazing.
Romeo and Juliet, Hamlet. I'm sure I'm forgetting some. Tempest, among others.
The Tempest with kids. My gosh. Amazing.
So again, like, we'd play the major roles, but then they'd take all the smaller ones, which was really fun.
What an opportunity for these kids. No wonder, you know, kids that age can fall in love with it.
Absolutely. But it was a blast. It was something that really, I really love it, because I like working with kids. I like teaching as well as doing theater.
Yeah.
And I love sharing theater with a bunch of enthusiastic young people. It's so much more rewarding than working in just a vac. Like, I mean, I love also just doing a straight professional theater show. That's great. But it can become a little bit of a vacuum of a community where you don't get to do a lot of outreach with people who aren't professionals. And so that was such a great opportunity to work with both professionals and communities at the same time.
Yeah. I'll bet it's kind of hard for you to really measure the impact you've had. But I'll bet it's been immense.
Probably in some kids' lives. Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Okay. So now, how did you end up coming to Salmon Arm? It's a long ways from Edmonton.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there is potentially maybe a bit of nepotism involved.
Yeah. I heard a rumor that you might be related to somebody involved here.
It just might be related to,
but you know what?
Some
it's
people
all who
are very
you know.
Involved in the theater here. Well, anyway, I guess, Kim was saying about 3 years ago, they started talking about wanting to do a Shakespeare play at Shoeswap Theatre, but they didn't really feel that there was any director in the community that had the experience to be able to direct Shakespeare using, you know, in terms of teaching language and all of the things that go along with doing a Shakespeare play. And so Kim had put my name forward, partly because knowing that I've done a lot of these residencies and worked in a lot of schools. So I've done a lot of teaching and working with non-professionals as well. So I'm used to working with people who may not have a full theatrical professional training situation. Mm-hmm. And so then a couple years later, so earlier this spring, Julia Boddy got in touch with me and wanted to know if I was interested. And I said, absolutely. Give me some dates and what are you thinking? And so we went back and forth for a couple of months about what might potentially work, be a good fit in the community for a play, and came up with some dates that worked for both here and for me and my schedule, and signed a contract, and here I am.
Wow. I mean, it's a real gift to this community, right?
Oh, it's great. I love it. It's super fun. I'm having a great time.
Really?
Yeah, I am. Absolutely.
It's not like work at all.
Well, I mean, it's work.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, like, this is the thing that I think a lot of communities have. It's a darn good thing that we have, you know, relatives and friends in other places that can come and bring the expertise in, because you're right, like, Salmon Arm is small, and, you know, a lot of the art sector people struggle with that. How to bring people in from outside the community to teach us things without breaking the bank, right?
Yeah, that's the tricky part.
Yeah, and to make sure that whatever it is that we do is actually going to fly here and be a benefit to our community. It's challenging. So yeah. It was very handy they sort of kind of knew you, kind of.
It's very handy that I can live with my aunt and uncle while yes. I'm here and not have to pay for expenses exactly. while I'm living, which makes everything much more affordable for exactly. everyone involved.
And so how do you like Salmon Arm so far?
I love it. It's yep. great. I spent a lot of time here as a kid.
Oh, okay.
Because my aunt and uncle are here. So we'd come every summer for
yeah.
however long. And then, but I've spent a little bit of time here as an adult, kind of passing through. I'll stop by and say hi. But I haven't spent a lot of time here, so it's been really nice to kind of get to know the town. It's a lovely place. It's yeah. super beautiful.
Well, it is. Beauty is our thing, right? Like, when we're talking about what makes people come to Salmon Arm and stay in Salmon Arm, a lot of people say, well, it's just simply beautiful. We have the lake and the mountains and the trees.
It is. And there's some good wineries nearby, so yeah. bonus on that.
Yeah. So I think it is an inspiring place to live.
Yeah,
I think that's why
great.
There's a lot of people in the arts sector here, a lot of creatives, lots of writers.
Very, and, very creative town. Yeah.
It is, and we're not shy about it.
No, I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Like, I don't think, I'm not sure, because, you know, I haven't been involved with Shoe Swap Theater, but it's been going for a long, long time. And
it
I don't
has.
Think there's been much shortage of people willing to step up and say, I want to try this, I want to try that. So I think that...
No, it seems to be a great little community.
Yeah. But compared to Edmonton with Fringe Festival and all that stuff, you must be...
Which I work for as well.
Do you really?
I do.
Oh,
I am the outdoor festival coordinator for the Fringe Festival in Edmonton.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. So you and Jackie must be talking about, because Jackie started the Theater on the Edge here.
Yeah, I'd actually talked with Kim about it quite extensively several years ago. And then Jackie had reached out to me, I think, was it this year? Yeah, it must have been in May or June, somewhere in there, asking if I knew anybody who'd be interested. But unfortunately, because it's so close to the Edmonton Fringe,
right.
I am completely unavailable to have anything to do with yeah. Theater on the Edge.
Of course. But still, it just must be nice to be able to share information and
oh yeah,
kind of get the feel for the different... I mean, it's just a whole different ballgame, I know, but it's the same concept, being able to try stuff, being experimental, being able to...
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing about the Fringe, is that... Yeah. And a lot of professional actors or directors or just theater artists will take that opportunity to do something that they'd never really be able to get to do in a regular season,
yeah.
right? Like
yeah.
without having to worry about season subscribers being upset or whatever, you can pick a play that might be a little bit off or weird or
yeah.
experimental and give it a go, which
yeah.
is super fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. So Liz, now we're going to start talking about the actual production.
Right.
I mean, I'm excited already, because just knowing the kind of background you have and knowing the age group of a lot of the cast, it's just going to be wild. I'm so thrilled. So let's start talking. So casting, when did all this start kind of happening?
Well, we kind of did a neat thing. Again, Shakespeare. There's a lot of people who have never done it, have absolutely no familiarity with speaking Shakespeare or whatever. We started with acting Shakespeare workshops before auditions. So we did
so smart.
4-hour long acting Shakespeare workshops that people who wanted to audition and anybody else who was interested were welcome to attend. And so we did a little bit of just a tiny little intro to acting and then kind of breaking down some language and learning how to learning a little bit about iambic pentameter and how to speak Shakespeare convincingly and all that kind of stuff. So we did that initially, I think it was the 12th and 13th of September. And then we did auditions the 14th and 15th and then cast the show over the weekend and came back and started rehearsals on the 20th. So,
wow. Actually, I do remember that there was a sword play workshop involved with
that. Oh, yeah, that was just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. We had Derek Metz from Vancouver, who is a fight choreographer, come out and do a little intro to just hand-to-hand combat for kind of everyone. And then he was working with the cast members in the show who are sword fighting to teach them sword fighting.
It's not something you do every day here. So that's
kind of, not a super common skill.
Yeah. No, I can see where that would come in handy though when doing Shakespeare because mm-hmm. that happens more than once.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's a couple fights from how many? No, there's four major fights in Romeo and Juliet.
Nice. Okay. So sorry, I jumped ahead there. Okay. So then you're casting and you picked this lovely cast and you've got a lot of youth.
Yeah. We kind of have it's a pretty even split between the youngins and the oldins or mature ones. Right. It's interesting. A part of actually picking Romeo and Juliet was based off of the demographics that usually come out in audition. It's so hard in community theater for people kind of 30s, 40s who are working full time, who mostly have kids and whatever other things that they're committed to be able to give 5 days a week to rehearsing a show, it's really challenging. So what I had been told right off the bat was that it was a lot of kind of 15 to 20 and then 60 plus is a lot of them. I was like, oh, what play are we going to do? I was trying to think it through and we landed on Romeo and Juliet because I was like, oh, that's perfect. It's about a bunch of teenagers and all of the adults in the town. That makes perfect sense.
I know, because in the actual play back in 1500 and something, Juliet's like 13 years old, mm-hmm. right? That's insane to
exactly.
imagine so now.
A lot of our cast is actually quite close in age to what the technically correct ages of the characters are in the show.
Yeah. Okay, so are you allowed to tell us about some of the cast? And
I don't know. I assume so.
Let's just go for it.
All right. Sounds good.
Community theater. We can, or community radio. We can do this.
Great.
Okay. So who plays Juliet?
Allie Balloon, who is awesome. Oh. She's in her first year of college. She just graduated high school last year and she is incredible. She's a super intuitive actor. She nice. Played Annie in the production of Annie at the high school last year.
Oh.
And I think she'd been in one other show before that, but she's just a really natural actor and just gets it really easily.
A fresh face, right?
Pardon?
Like a fresh, like if somebody's, you know, been through the mill for 10 years, it gives them a sort of certain idea of what things are going to be, right?
Yeah.
And how things are going to go. And as a director, you must kind of like it when people have a little bit of experience, but are basically an open book for you and can
direct. Well, and especially when I can work with an actor that is young and excited and intuitive, who is very directable because they already have fabulous impulses and instincts that they'll just do stuff and make great offers, which is really exciting. that's fun.
So nice. Okay, and who's Romeo?
Romeo is Alex Delaney, who is in grade 12 right now. Mm-hmm. And fun fact, they're a real life couple. Which
really?
I didn't even really know when I was trying to figure out the casting. Oh,
the dynamics must be very interesting.
It is. It's an interesting challenge,
and,
actually.
And if there's chemistry already, all that part's done.
Absolutely. That's the easy part. But I think it's also kind of difficult to do a show if you're in a romantic relationship with somebody that you're in a romantic relationship with in real life, because especially in a show like Romeo and Juliet, where it's so demanding emotionally and they go on this kind of horrific journey together as characters. And I think it's probably quite challenging to separate the tragedy of the play from real life romance, just because you don't have that separation necessarily.
That's true.
But they're doing great. They're doing a great job. So
it is like, it's just going to require a bit of maturity from them. And
absolutely. Right? And discipline of like be able to let everything go when you walk in the door and then leave everything behind when you walk out the door.
Yeah, that is a challenge. Well, good for them for taking it on.
Oh yeah, they're doing great.
Amazing. Okay, and just because like I'm not like really familiar with the Romeo and Juliet cast, but Mercutio
is
who is that? Because that was my favorite character. That's a lot of people's favorite characters.
It is a lot of people's favorite characters. That's because he's filthy. He has a filthy, filthy mind.
Maybe that's why he's so enjoyable.
Jokes over and over and over again. Actually, Mercutio is being played by our one cast member that does not fall into the 20 and other under the 50 plus category.
Well, it's probably a super demanding role.
So. Yes, it is. It's being played by Uther Radcliffe, who has done a bunch of stuff with Shoe Swap Theater before. Oh. He was in the complete works of William Shakespeare several years ago.
Oh my gosh, I saw that. It was fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. He's brilliant. So he's brilliant. I was so happy that he showed up because it's not really a role that I want to be giving to a 16 or 17 year old just because of the content in it. But he's fabulous. Super great energy and totally brings that character to life.
I can't wait because that is, I don't know what it is. Like maybe it is because we're secretly filthy in our heads. I don't know, but I just... I just feel like Mercutio adds something so, I don't know, like it's just the, you know, you got all this super high level love that most of us will never experience in our lives, right? And so you need that bottom of the barrel reality check that he provides.
That's totally what his role in the show is, right? Yeah. He's always trying to get Romeo to see himself for who he actually is and get his friends to just chill out about all of these idiotic love things that they're obsessed with and get them to focus in on just having fun.
Yeah. Then of course I won't be the spoiler just in case you haven't actually seen the production of Romeo and Juliet.
Does anybody not know Romeo and Juliet? I don't know.
I don't know, but he doesn't last the whole play. And
no,
that's
tragic. No,
it's awful, but that's what Shakespeare does. He likes to kill people off. So it's fine.
Well, actually it's interesting because up until his death, the play is a comedy. It's a romantic comedy. It should end like all of Shakespeare's other romantic comedies with a wedding.
Everybody gets together.
Yeah. Whatever, but it doesn't. And it's when Mercutio is killed that the play flips from being a romantic comedy to a tragedy.
Wow. That's deep. I never really thought about it that way.
Yeah, it is.
Wow, you're opening up a whole wide world here.
There you go.
So that was like, that's kind of interesting because I don't know. I never thought about that, about how that might fit in, say, with The Taming of the Shrew and stuff like that, that the you know, that the pattern of romantic comedy would have been there in Romeo and Juliet. I guess because we all know what to expect at the end.
Yeah.
Well, most of us knew the ending. We don't see the pattern. We don't go, oh, well, yay, it's a romp in the grass. Right?
Like, yeah, it's, absolutely. But it totally is for the first half. Like, it's ridiculous. The whole first half of the play is ridiculous.
God, it's so interesting. So I'm so, like, such a Luddite when it comes to Shakespeare. It's just kind of interesting to hear just these little tidbits that are kind of background and, you know, insights.
Well, I was lucky with this one, too, because I've been in it three times before. So.
Oh, really? Yes. Have you been Juliet all three times?
I've also played Benvolio.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. That's exciting.
So, Benvolio is being played by Bethany Riley, who is a 15-year-old who is homeschooled and a ballet dancer. And
oh, fabulous.
She's super sweet and also another one of the really intuitive ones who just gets Shakespeare and gets acting. It's nice. Really fun to work with her.
Wow, what a gift. Okay, so who else we got? I know you got
who
a
else
huge
we got?
Cast.
Oh, there's there's 20 of them.
Wow.
So it's pretty big.
Yeah.
Who else do we have? Ashley Honeiser, who's another one of the young ones who's in grade 12. She's playing Tybalt. We have a lot of gender bending in our cast going on, which is really fun. A lot of traditionally male characters are being played by women as women, or at least as kind of androgynous. We're still using the pronouns he, but they're definitely dressed as women. We've set it in kind of a, what is the word I'm looking for? Not steampunk, but a steampunky idea or sensibility of it's old fashioned. We don't have technology. There's no cell phones. We're still playing with swords. There are no guns, but fashion is not necessarily, it's Victorian based, but much more contemporary than that. And women can be in positions of power and have opinions and hang out with men. And that's totally cool. But it's still set quasi in the past, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
Yeah. Oh, you're just playing with it. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and part of that was to accommodate some gender bending.
Yeah.
Without going super contemporary, because Romeo and Juliet really doesn't work in a contemporary world.
Yeah.
You just text him. Hey, babe, I'm taking a potion. Come get me in like 24 hours.
I know.
Problem solved.
Don't have to screw up that, right? Like, there's no way to get the whole message mix up, which is the it's the whole point of why this happens, right?
Exactly.
It's because of the message mix up and missing and
haste and lack of communication in a very short period of time where a lot of massive decisions get made without necessarily taking the time to think it through.
Yeah. But you know, I'd love to talk about the gender bending thing later, but let's get to the cast, because this is so exciting.
Frank Manning is playing Capulet, who is a former English teacher and I think drama teacher as well.
Oh, wow.
And he's fantastic. It's great watching in English. He was so funny at our first read. He's got his copy of Romeo and Juliet out and is double checking all of the cuts that I've made in the script against his full version.
Oh, really?
And was really funny because hearing it out loud for the first time, I was like, oh, I shouldn't have cut that line. That jump in logic doesn't make sense. And he'd be furiously looking through his copy. And I was like, yes, Frank, you're absolutely right. I definitely need to put that line back in.
Nice. It's like having a conscience in there.
Yeah, it's lovely. And then who else? Tons of people who've been involved with Shoe Swap Theater for a long time. So like Julia Boddy is in the show. She's playing the nurse.
Of course. That makes sense.
Yeah.
The caring, loving.
Yes.
I'll just protect you,
yes,
nurse.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense. And then Kim McMillan is playing Friar Lawrence, which is a bit of a typecast role considering he, you know, spent a bunch of time being a counselor, which is basically what Friar Lawrence's role in the show is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Marcia Beckner, who has been around she joined Shoe Swap Theater in 1978 in Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh my gosh.
So she's playing Lady Montague and the Apothecary, some similar characters.
Of course. I could totally see Marcia doing that.
Yeah, she's great. And then Hammy McClymont, who is playing the prince, who came here a few years ago and has been running A House theaters across Canada for ever. But mostly on the admin side of things, and has finally found his way back to acting here in Shoe Swap, so that's super exciting. Who else do we have? Jackie, who runs Theater on the Edge Festival, is playing a bunch of different characters. She's kind of the leader of our chorus. Just partly because she's such a great mover, so she's in some fights and she's got some dance choreography and playing all sorts of small parts, so she's on and off the stage all over that show. Randy Brogdon, who's also super involved in Shoe Swap Theater.
Yeah, he's got to be in pretty much every production.
Just about, And he also built the set, of course, for us. So,
yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, it sounds like it's going to be fabulous, and we'll see so many familiar faces that it'll be just wonderful.
And a ton of new ones as well.
Thank you. This has been so interesting so far.
It's been great. Super fun. I'm having a good time.
Well, and we're learning about the cast and sort of some of the process and your background. But now, this is your time to shine. This is, as a director, you get to build a production with all of this great talent. So tell us about the process of once you actually start rehearsals, how does this look?
I base my process kind of off of Harold Clurman, who's a great director, the way that he built a rehearsal process. And I've been lucky enough to work with some great directors who have worked kind of one step removed from him, and it's a process that I find works well for all shows, but particularly Shakespeare, when you've got a lot of difficult language to deal with. So we get together, cast the show, everyone gets in the same room, we just do a read through. I don't say anything, I just say go, just read it, just impulse. It's the first time, the last time that you get to hear the words for the first time. And so we do that, and of course with Shakespeare it's a bit more challenging because half the time you don't know actually what you're saying. And then from there, we rehearse the show around a table. So we're not doing table work in the traditional sense of, oh, let's talk about the meaning of the play and what the playwright might have meant here and the historical context. I don't really care about any of that. We rehearse the play without blocking, basically. So we figure out, what am I saying? Make sure we all know what all of the language means and what the actual text is saying, and then why am I saying it, and what am I doing with it, and what am I trying to get? Why am I speaking at all? Why does this character talk here? And then really kind of figure out, oh, well, I'm trying to pin you down because you're trying to evade responsibility for something that I want to blame you for, or whatever. So that's what I'm nailing you to the wall with this line. And so we go through the whole text that way.
Yeah.
And I spend about 100 plus hours breaking it down before walking into rehearsal so that I have something to offer for every single line that every single person has in the show. And so we spent probably just over two weeks on that process of acting to each other without worrying about where do I put my feet? What do I do with my hands? How am I standing? So that just the actual psychology of the character started to become really alive.
Yeah.
And so then once we get through that process, we've basically rehearsed the entire show without any staging. We get back together around the table and do what I call an act through rather than a read through, where we all get to hear. And it's really neat because from our first read, where there's a lot of kind of vague reading of things that we're not really sure what they are, to the second time where people are really talking to each other and there's chemistry happening and there's just a lot of aliveness around the table.
Wow.
Which is great. So that's part one of the process.
Part one. Oh gosh.
And then part two is getting up on our feet. So, which I find to be a much quicker process once you've done that table work, because everyone already knows what they're doing and what they're saying. And because they know that, they have impulses to move. They understand, like, if I'm trying to get something from you, then I might be pursuing you. If I'm trying to avoid you, then I'm trying to get away from you. Every scene is a bit of a chase scene, right? Somebody's always chasing something else on stage. And so we spend a bit of time sketching in blocking for all of the scenes. That's part two. And everybody's got scripts still at that point. And then part three is coming back after we've done our initial blocking. We do a stumble through at the end of that, where we kind of just to make sure that everyone knows where they're coming from and where they're going and starting to get an idea of what the flow of the show is. And then we start over again and rework through every single scene off book this time, but also really doing the detail work, the fine detail work. So the first blocking rehearsal is just kind of broad strokes that this is the shape of the scene. The second time through is the details of, like, oh, what if you brushed her hair away there, where you'd like it, just little,
oh my gosh,
little things like, yeah, that. And then we finish that part of the process and do another stumble through and try and remember anything that we've just done in the last few weeks. And then from there, we just start doing runs.
Wow.
Which is where we're at right now. Well, actually, we're in Tech Week right now.
This is all since September 20th.
Yes. Yes.
This is insane.
Yeah, it's fast.
How many hours a day are you at this?
We've been rehearsing Tuesday through Friday from 6 to 10, and then Sundays from 2 to 6.
Holy
so
God.
20 hours a week.
So this is a really big commitment for all of the participants, all of the actors. And I just, like, good for them and good for you for doing such a thorough job.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is not just, let's just read and maybe we'll memorize some lines.
No, it's really demanding.
Yeah, this is so, what's the word? Like, holistic in a way, right? Like, it's got all the parts. All of the cast members must be learning so much from you.
Well, I mean, I'm treating it like I would any professional process that I do, because why wouldn't I? It's just more spread out. I mean, I'm used to doing this process in a condensed 3 weeks, 6 hours a day, 8 hours a day situation, whereas this is actually kind of lovely because it's spread out over such a long period of time.
Oh my gosh, so you're thinking it's spread out.
it's hugely spread out, but I kind of enjoy that, and that it gives actors more time to let things sink in as well. Like, they get to sleep on it more often than you do in a professional process.
Oh, wow. It just seems like everything happening within about a 5 or 6 week thing. Cause you're opening this weekend.
Yeah. We open on Friday.
Yeah. So this is, I'm thinking I know that Caravan does this similarly. Like they've got about 3 weeks where all the actors actually show up and everything just starts happening and it's all crazy. And then they open and like the show evolves usually over the run. Mm-hmm. So do you think, is that something that kind of happens here too? Like your opening weekend has sort of a certain flavor and a certain timing. And then by the time you do your closing weekend, it might be entirely different.
Well, I don't think it's entirely different. I mean, I think there's a different energy, like opening night especially is always a weird energy with any show anywhere anytime because it's the first time that you're doing it in front of an audience and that changes so much. Like having energy, I mean, theater is an exchange. It's, I mean, it's not really a dialogue, but it kind of is. It's a dialogue of energy between a live audience and live actors on stage, which is what makes it really different from film. Mm-hmm. That the audience does affect the people on stage, and so opening night's always a weird energy because all of a sudden they're getting all of this energy back at them for the first time. And so that's always a bit zany. And then I think it usually kind of settles down. You get used to that. And so then, yeah, of course, there's still tiny discoveries that are being made. But I don't think that it really changes drastically from your first weekend here. It shouldn't change drastically from your first weekend to your last weekend.
But they're definitely, like, because your actors are still learning and growing in their parts too. Like they must own it more and more over the course of the run.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And just
that confidence must kind of really grow in them. And
well, I think there tends to be more of a sense of play too after opening weekend. Once you're confident and I do know my lines. I do know my blocking. I do know what's going on. Then there is more ability to not change things necessarily, but react and play in the moment rather than trying to remember blocking and lines, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. It becomes a bit more natural, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And a little more fluid and a little bit more human.
Yeah, yeah. So, and also I'm interested in this because I'm always, you know, I'm a visual person. What kind of set design have you...
So she laughs. So the design of the show has really been a community effort. So initially I had said I would do the sound design for the show because that's a thing that I like doing, my own sound designs when I'm directing. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't really end up with finding a set designer. So I ended up kind of doing the set design as well. But Randy also had a lot of input into the set design and had some ideas that I then jumped off of and attempted to draw. I'm not a visual artist at all, so trying to draft anything is absolutely not my forte. So Randy took my very questionable, not to scale drawings and turned them into something functional. And then Anne Scalehorn, who has also been the technical producer on the whole thing, has also been absolutely instrumental in terms of creating this set. It's quite a simple set, but there's a lot of painting. Like we have a mosaic floor thing that Nikki Weber might be her last name, Griffin Weber's mother, I know, came in and helped us out with. And so there's just been so many people involved with creating this set that I don't even know who to say designed it. It was totally a community effort.
Well, no, that's okay. Like sometimes that needs to happen because lots of people have different pieces of knowledge that when brought together, make this really incredible, you know, like kind of diverse set that appeals to everybody.
Yeah. I mean, I had an idea in my head of what would be cool. And then everybody else kind of took elements and pieces of what I was word vomiting about and turned it into something really neat.
Yay.
It looks great in there.
Oh, that's an exciting part too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And also I always love how innovative the set people, you know, can make things move and switch and completely change the look of a scene.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really we have three set pieces. It's quite a simple set. There's two boxes and a balcony, but they move around all over the place.
The balcony. Oh, oh, that's so exciting. I can't wait. That's like sort of, this is this weird icon of Romeo and Juliet that you see in referenced in movies and all kinds of things when kids and on stage will build a balcony and it somehow collapses and falls over, right? It's like such a... It's totally. Just one of those things you see all the time happening. I hope that doesn't happen here.
I don't think it will. That thing is pretty sturdy.
Yeah, well, with Randy behind the scenes there, it probably is going to be well built.
That balcony isn't going anywhere.
Oh, it's so so exciting. And then so lighting and all that kind of thing.
Lighting's also been a total group effort between Jim, whose last name I don't even know. He's actually just been appointed the new technical director of Shoe Swap Theater.
Oh.
And he's great. So he did the hang and decided where all the lights were going and all that kind of stuff and set some basic cues. But unfortunately, he was unavailable for our tech weekend. So Anne and I ended up taking over a bunch of that as well in conjunction with Jim. And then he came back in after the weekend and then we worked together again to kind of unify everybody's ideas. So
yeah.
Another group effort on the design front.
That's okay. Everybody has such knowledge. It's good.
Well, and
for you, you're imparting a lot of your knowledge, right? Like this is your kind of experience is so fantastic for everybody to take part in. So,
and it's fun to work with other people too. I mean, I'm always learning as well. It's why I loved being in theater all the time. It's
yeah.
a profession that you never, ever stop learning in.
Yeah, that's true. And so, okay. So there's sound design, lighting, the stage design, and
costume design is the big one.
Who's done that?
That
is a huge part.
Team effort. That was the one element that I had absolutely nothing to do with, and they totally made it happen all on their own, and they're amazing.
Wow.
Now I'm going to blank on their last names, of course, Karen, Ellen, and Brittany, which probably, I don't know if that helps anybody. I know Karen and Ellen have done costumes for Shoe Swap Theater a bunch before, and I think they're also involved with the opera in Kelowna and other things. But they've done an incredible job of creating this absolutely stunning world for the play to live in terms of costume. It just everything looks so unified and it's incredible. It's one of the best costume designs I've ever had on any show I've ever directed, period. Yeah, which that's is fantastic.
Aw. Well, that's another wonderful thing to look forward to because some people like to go to theater just for the costumes.
Yeah, they've done an incredible job. Everybody looks fabulous.
Wow. Oh, this is so exciting. I can't wait for opening weekend. We got tickets for Saturday night.
Oh, yay.
Yay. And now,
as the art world turns, a dramatic moment in the arts.
Well, the drama, just got that. The dramatic moment, we always try to find something that's happening in the arts world that kind of matches our topic of the day. And one of the things that's been, dramatically happening in lots of places over the last couple of years is gender parity. And you have a dramatic moment for us today, all the way from Saskatchewan, Shakespeare on the Saskatchewan, and the gender parity of their productions, right?
Yeah. So in 2017, this summer, they do a summer rep of Shakespeare shows. They, I believe, were the first company in Canada to actually achieve gender parity at 50% male, 50% female for their Shakespeare Festival, which is quite exciting.
That is exciting because it is a bit like Shakespeare's plays are male heavy.
Well, they were written in a time that it was illegal for women to act on stage. So, yeah.
So it's challenging already to dress a man up as a woman and make him behave like a woman. So it probably was easier.
Much easier. Keep the woman out of it.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is problematic 500 years later, where a lot of our summer theater across this country is Shakespeare festivals. So a lot of the work that's available for professional actors in the summer is classical theater, because that's what tends to be done in the summer. Which is really hard if you're happen to be not male.
Yeah. So here we go. And you, not only that, but your production is very near gender parity as well.
Yeah, actually, we're heavier on the female side than we are on the male side, which is kind of fun. Yeah. We're 55-45 in terms of percentages.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
And I think that is really significant. It's not just about who the roles are, whether they're male or female roles. It's about, you know, giving everybody the opportunity to show us their incredible talent and abilities.
Absolutely. And I mean, in my opinion, like if it's not a character that the story is dependent on them being a specific gender, which some characters are, right? That's just the way it is, and that's totally fine. But like, there's absolutely no reason that Benvolio has to be male at all. There's no reason that Tybalt has to be male. There's absolutely no rhyme or reason behind that, apart from the fact that they're just traditionally male characters. But there's absolutely no plot line that's affected whatsoever by changing the gender of those characters.
Yeah.
Or just leaving them gender neutral, and who cares? Like, see the character. I want to see Tibble. The human being. I don't care if they're male or female. It doesn't really matter.
Exactly. And we've seen this. I witnessed this amazing switch up last summer when I was in London, and we went to the Globe Theatre and saw Midsummer Night's Dream. So the reproduction of Shakespeare's Globe Theatre. And it was pretty exciting anyway, just be in this unbelievably gorgeous, complete replica.
It's pretty beautiful.
It's awesome. And then we saw A Midsummer Night's Dream, which was done with a South Asian theme. So the support things, like the set design, the music, some of the lines had been switched up to be, you know, East Indian. And
Neat. It
was awesome. Sitar player was up on the top of the stage playing during most of it. And it was a really intensely beautiful production. And then having these little bits of Bollywood kind of shot in every once in a while was just fabulous. But one of the things that was striking was that the role of Helena was played by a man, and he was named Helenus, and that particular love story with him and Demetrius was a gay love story.
That's really neat.
Yeah, so it was a complete switch around, and it was fabulous.
And it still totally works.
It totally worked.
Yeah,
it was just brilliant. It was absolutely wonderful to watch, and I don't know, I just thought, okay, like, there is nothing that we can't change about this that would not be relevant to our time, right? Like, Shakespeare is kind of like a template that we can play with and have all these wonderful storylines play out without losing the integrity of the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so there we go. There was my little rant about changing genders and changing the orientation of characters. Like, it still works.
It totally
still works. There's something about Shakespeare that still works.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's interesting. A few people have asked me in the last little while, why Shakespeare? Like, why is, there must have been other great writers. Like, why is Shakespeare the one that has survived, and why do we still care? And I was like, you know, that's a really great question. I mean, even, you know, when people ask me, like, why bother doing Shakespeare anymore? Like, it's done. Forget it. Which, you know, there's part of me that does agree with that statement. Like, yeah, okay, I don't really care what a 500 years dead white dude from England has to tell me about the current state of the world. But that, I don't think that's the point. I think that, I mean, there were other great writers in Shakespeare's time for sure that had just as or almost as good a mastery of language that he has. However, what I think sets him apart is that he had kind of a intuitive understanding of human psychology and human behavior years and years and years and years and years before that ever was a thing. Like, if you look at most other plays that were written basically up until the mid-1900s, they don't dive into the human, like, what drives humans to behave the way that we do in the same way that Shakespeare did. Until psychology became quite prevalent in the mid-1900s. And then you start to see playwrights really playing with that again, but in a contemporary language. So the combination of that human psychology and the what we now call Shakespearean language is so powerful and strong that I think it does hold up and it is still relevant.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. We're so lucky. Well, I do feel like there's a lot of things that we can learn from the old masters, right? I feel like that in visual art and literary arts and, you know, all of the different sectors, we have things to learn. And there's some things that are required to evolve past, right? Because there was a time when, you know, like you said before, like, it was illegal for women to act.
Yeah, right? So absolutely.
There were times when things weren't quite set up in the way we'd like them to be set up.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the things that happened in these last 500 years are integral to our development as humans.
Absolutely.
And we need to keep looking back, digging them up and re-examining and then interpreting and representing it, right? Like just trying to make sense of all of this. And it's only by looking back and kind of mixing it all up again and showing it off again that we can learn from it. So, mm-hmm. you know, this is another way that you're helping change the world is continuing to bring back Shakespeare and making it vibrant and alive and relevant to us.
Yeah. Good I mean, for you. Some of Shakespeare's plays are better than others.
But well, what's your favorite one?
What's my favorite? Oh, that's tough. That is really tough. I really like Macbeth a lot. Yeah, that might be one of my favorites.
I have never seen Macbeth live.
Oh, really?
Yep. That's one I haven't seen live. I remember I had to read it, but I never read the whole thing in high school.
Yeah.
I read parts of it and I made my way past the exam and that was it.
Fair enough.
Probably lots of, you know, grade 11 English, same thing.
Oh yeah, definitely. But, he dies in the end, okay. So you know, yeah.
Oh, spoilers.
I know, sorry.
Okay, so you love Macbeth. What else? What other ones are your favorites?
Oh, that's tough. I mean, Summer Night's Dream is one of my favorites, although I'm kind of sick of it. I've done it so many times.
Really?
I can almost recite the whole thing top to bottom. Oh my gosh. At least like an hour, 20-minute version of it.
Let me guess. Have you been Puck too many times?
I've been Puck, Helena, Hermia, First Fairy, Quince. Name a character. I've probably played it at some point.
Is it because it's like kind of a world favorite? Like it's just, it's kind
yeah, of... Yeah, and a lot of it I think also has, yeah, it's easy to do. It's fun to do. It gives, there's so much wiggle room for design and concept and interpretation with that show that yeah. I think it's just a really fun show to do.
Yeah.
And doing residencies in schools, it's a really accessible show. Like, who doesn't want to play a fairy? Come on.
Well, yeah. Right? I know. That's true.
I mean, little gremlin fairies, Shakespeare terrifying fairies, but you still.
Know, those are better.
Way more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this has been awesome. Okay, we're just getting down to the last couple minutes of the show, so we better get some details out there.
Sure.
So opening weekend this weekend, November 3rd is the first night. So November 3rd, 4th, and then the afternoon matinee on the 5th.
Correct.
And we're going to run 3 weekends.
Yes.
So tell us about how to get everywhere. How to get everything and get there.
How to get there. So it's at ShoeSwap Theater. Tickets are available online. You can go to the ShoeSwap Theater, ShoeSwapTheater.com, I believe. And there is a link to the online ticket sales that you can buy with your credit card. If you're not into online things, you can buy them in advance at Entwined Fiber Arts. Or if you're the last minute kind of person, you can also just show up and buy them at the door. However, that being said, there are a few performances that have very few tickets left. So if you are planning on buying at the door, I would suggest buying them in advance so that you don't miss out.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to miss out. And what's traditional in Salmon Arm is that word spreads. And by the last couple of performances, they're packed. You can't get a ticket if you know, even if you knew somebody, even if somebody was your aunt and uncle, you still wouldn't get a ticket. So yes, I would recommend tickets in advance. And it's, you know, it's a reasonable deal. It's a beautiful night out. And we're also, the Shugo tickets are available. If you're between the age of 12 and 21, you can buy a Shugo ticket at the Art Gallery and go over to Entwined and exchange it for a ShoeSwap Theater ticket. That's a good deal for youth because, you know, it's $5.
It's perfect.
I know.
It's great.
Yeah.
And also, the show is a tight 2 hours. It is not 3.5 hours of unedited Shakespeare. It's quick, it's fast, it's fun. So
yeah, and it's just, there's nothing like live theater. There is just nothing like it. If you've never ever been to a live production of Shakespeare, just do it. It is just never something you walk away and say, geez, I wish I hadn't spent 2 hours doing that. No, it'll change you. So thank you so much, Liz. This
thank
has been
you.
An absolute pleasure. And I hope that you enjoy your time here and that
absolutely.
You'll come back again. Maybe next time you'll do The Tempest or
who
Macbeth.
Knows?
Or
The Tempest would be fun, actually.
I would love to see that. I have not seen that one live either.
It's great.
Oh, my gosh. So I just want to do one more shout out to our awesome sponsor, DeMille's Farm Market. They sponsor a whole year of Artscape. Have you been to DeMille's yet?
I don't know that I have. Oh. I've hardly been anywhere. I really just live at the theater.
I know. Okay, well, at some point on a Saturday or something, you got to go out to DeMille's Farm Market. It's really beautiful. It's just a lovely experience. It's a grocery store, but it's also, you know, it's a petting zoo and there's awesome products there.
And fun. Just
beautiful produce, and there's probably pumpkins there. We have a corn maze there. It's just kind of one of those places that you have to see.
Noted. All right.
So they've been an awesome sponsor. Thanks to Brad DeMille for doing that. And for other arts events information, you can find them on our website, salmonarmartscenter.ca, under the participate page. We do a listing of arts events by date. And so you can find stuff that's going on for the next few weeks in Salmon Arm, which there's never a shortage of. But I absolutely recommend that you see Romeo and Juliet, starring real life Romeo and Juliet's and directed by Liz Hobb. Thanks again, Liz.
Thank you so much.
All right. Remember, you can also find Shoesop Theater on Facebook. You can also find Salmon Arm Arts Center on Facebook. There's lots of different ways to find information that's happening in the world and in Salmon Arm. And yeah, any final words?
Just thanks for having me. It's been a blast.
It's been a pleasure. It's been our pleasure. And for all 8 of our listeners, we're going to be so... I'm just kidding. It's actually pretty good. I actually really love this because even though it feels like we only have 5 people listen to us, we get comments all the time about stuff we talk about on this show.
Hooray. That's
great. So I think you might have converted some people today.
I hope so.
All right, everybody. Have a great week and we'll see you at the theater.